All right, we are live.
He said to great fanfare.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Venus as the Beaver.
And this is Tony Venus,
Tom Lawrence,
Mary Tomich,
and Phil Perotta.
And we are live at PangoCon 2017.
That's right. And that happens to be also the name of our episode. You know, try to fit that on the webpage. we're excited to be here. And we've got some of our friends of the show that are here. And people we paid. No.
We paid people to be our friends and show up.
I mean, an audience. People, yeah. Yes. And they should be applauded for getting up so early to be here.
Brian's like, wait a minute, I didn't get any money.
Yeah, what are you talking about? I don't know about you guys, but I suspect you're in the same boat as I, that you've had an excellent time, you've seen some great lectures, or in the case of two members of our podcast here, or two co-hosts, they've given excellent lectures.
Phil and I we both had a talk, and they put it on at the exact same time.
So we couldn't see each other's.
Yeah, we couldn't go to each other's, but...
Wow.
Maybe that is my excuse. I didn't show the payment cons. I would have had to pick a favorite.
See, there you go. That's how you get out of that.
I wasn't able to make it Friday and Saturday, so I'm here today, though.
And we're very happy about that.
I really
because wish we that know it. We know you. Your news segment. I'm calling it your news segment is excellent. Always, always. So.
I obsess over information. I can't help it.
There's so much news, and we'll be obviously covering that. But before we do that, I'm kind of curious. I want to ask you guys just to find out if you've had a chance to go to a bunch of other lectures or talks, and if so, what's been your favorite so far besides this podcast and your own talk? How about you, Phil?
I went to the Scientific Linux talk by Connie C. and
how was that?
Bonnie King, I believe her name is. That was amazing. That was truly inspirational. I got a Scientific Linux 7.3 live CD from Connie herself.
Wow.
She's the founder of, and we, just a little bit of background for people who may not be aware. a couple of years ago, there was a talk that the presenter didn't show up. And so, and it was a Linux talk. And we were kind of sitting in the audience, and this person behind me, I kind of overheard her talk about Scientific Linux or something to that effect, and come to find out it was Connie, and she is the founder of Scientific Linux, or one of the founders on that team. And so it suddenly occurred to me, oh my gosh, we got to get her to talk. So here we are 2 years later, and she gave a presentation.
Yes, I found out about that because you mentioned it on a show a couple weeks ago. And I went to it, and I got a awesome badge that says, Scientifics is the Linux for me.
Oh,
excellent.
That's cool.
Because she works at the Fermilabs
Research Illinois.
Institute.
Yeah, and I think actually I subscribed to their mail list, and there was a bunch of retirement stuff, because I think she just retired.
Yes, she did.
So that's great. I'm glad that you went there. I had to go home and work on my work on my podcast script.
You should retire from a job like that. Like, you should just do it forever. If I was a scientist, like, that's, I plan to do what I do forever. So
good, Phil. I'm glad that you went to it. Glad that you did.
Yeah, that is cool.
That was my favorite one so far. The day is young though.
That's true.
Yeah.
So Tony.
I got to meet Cory Doctorow, and I know he's been here in the past, but this is the first time that I got to go up and meet him. And actually,
You scored a book.
Yeah, they're giving out books.
I seen you carrying his book.
Did you get his autograph?
I did. Yeah, he autographed the inside page
to my best friend Tony. Is that what it said?
It says for Tony. It does.
All right.
It doesn't say best friend, but
okay.
I'm gonna add it.
Just get a red Sharpie and you'll be all set, Tom.
No, I love his books. I think I have not read this one, but I think I've read all of his other books.
Well, this one just came out like last week, I think he said.
Okay.
And he read a section of it during one of his talks.
His really interesting copyright book is good. My daughter has read his Homeland, and Big Brother, which are just, if you haven't read them, highly, highly recommend reading them.
Yeah, that's cool. Is it called Little Brother?
Was it Little Brother, Big Brother?
Sibling?
One of those, yeah.
I'm trying to remember the name now. Hole in the blank. It's too early. I've not had enough coffee.
Feels
all right, well, drink
just
up.
Read
drink
all up. Of Cory Doctorow's book and your life will be better.
It's yes. called Little Brother.
Little Brother.
Little Brother.
Why did I have a name wrong?
It's because it's, you know, in this day and age, we think Big Brother. That's
the other one. Well, the Big Brother. You think
Middle Brother.
Yeah, we think about surveillance.
Anyways, my daughter has read both of them and it changed her view of government.
Oh, really?
Yes. She's now much more like her father.
She's now an aunt.
But you know what I thought was the most interesting part with his talk was he really got into talking about more of copyright and Creative Commons and
yep.
and everything, and it was just really interesting. You know, some of the points you're saying where Creative Commons in overall is really good, but where sometimes you would think it gives more toward opening up and freedom is sometimes the opposite of that happens, where it's not as freedom because there's certain things that are assumed about a free license kind of thing.
Yeah. His whole copyright book is just really thought-provoking. It's really good. Yeah. And it's so much talk about that. He also, and I can't remember the exact title of it, but it's really funny. He does a talk called It's Not a Toaster Strapped to a Fax Machine or something weird like that. And it's about devices and everything else and the way we think about it. So, side note, the Google engineers, when after they read his Little Brother book, they started encrypting their private data connections between the Google data centers because they're private lease lines. They never thought to encrypt them. They started encrypting them. And then later we found out that the NSA was tapping the lease lines that are not part of the public internet. So they were actually ahead of the curve. And they actually, when they were interviewed, they're like, did you have inside information the NSA was doing this? They said, oh, no, we used to read Cory Doctorow's books. And it kind of scared us, and we started encrypting everything.
Yeah.
I thought that was such like the best answer from the Google engineers. You're like, yeah, we just read his books and it scared us.
Wow. Yeah, that is a that was excellent.
He's made changes, you know what I mean? And everyone's like, did he have inside information to say, you know? He just thought ahead, like they could do this. And everyone's like, no, they're not doing this, and then Snowden said, yeah, they're doing it.
That's very cool. So Phil, Tom.
So Tom, who hasn't gone to any lecture, did you? What was your favorite? That if you would have attended,
which one would have you gone to?
There you go.
Oh, I don't know. I looked at it and then I said, I'm going to get a, what do they call it, FOMO, fear of missing out. So I stopped looking because I knew I wasn't going to be able to make it. My time has been consumed with moving into my new offices, and it all has been the last 2 weeks of hell.
Oh, I've seen it on Facebook. Yeah. You know, yeah. I go into that hell.
Are you going to stick around for any talks today? Or do you have
I probably will today. I'm going to hang out today. I don't look because I'm like, I'm here, so why not take it? There's only a couple talks, so I'll figure out which one. I have not looked. I was going to start looking right after the show's over.
Yeah, they have an app this year.
Yeah, so I've seen that. Cool. I seen the app. Didn't Phil's friend make the app?
Yes, that was pocketpenguin.party, and it's got a Let's Encrypt cert on it.
Yay!
It's nice and responsive if you view it in your web browser or on your phone.
Yeah. Very cool.
Shout out to one of the friends of the podcast. The very first presentation I got to go to was a social web PKI, and it sounded like a pretty neat implementation of GNU Social. That was by our friends of the Wayne State Lug, Claudio and Mikey G.
Oh, cool.
Good. So, and for those of you who are only listening, Tony is scrolling down the Pocket Penguin list here, the schedule. Looks like for yesterday. And you're looking for what?
Us.
Oh, us. That's on Grand Saturday. Go to Sunday. There you go. I think it just went by.
So for Pocket Penguin, I got a little badge that says, my Pocket Penguin is huge.
Huge.
There we are.
All right.
Sweet.
All right.
That's us.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, since no one's asked me, I'm going to just go ahead and just blurt out what my favorite one was. My favorite one was the whiskey tasting. which happened, it actually, and I'm a morning person, as you guys know. It kicked off at 10 p.m., and I got to sample, I think, eight or nine different whiskeys, and then I drove home. No, there was very small amounts.
And, well, it is 12 cups clocked somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, no, that was really good. I mean, from the non-tech perspective. And then the technical talk that I really enjoyed was the rootkit. The rootkit talk yesterday.
I so wanted to get into that one, but I got there 5 minutes late.
Oh, it was overflow out the door.
Yeah, yeah, I was outside the door, and there wasn't even room for me to stand inside or sit anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll just go find something else to see.
Yes.
Because I couldn't hear from outside the door.
Yeah, so that was good. And I even asked a question at it. I felt proud of myself. Yeah. No, it was it was about cubes, and because we were talking about virtualization, and one of the big concerns is when the people that are running those rootkits, that being able to break out of a virtual machine, which I think has happened, and then also, so I mentioned cubes and how that seemed to be a fairly secure environment, and they mentioned that a security issue that had come out a few weeks ago, and I went and looked it up, and yeah, it's not really Cubes itself, it's I think it was with the Zen hypervisor, so
yeah.
That was posted on the Cubes website. So yeah, so I asked a little question about that, and somebody had mentioned it to me after that, but that was that was a really good talk. I enjoyed it. Really opened my eyes to the fact that we're all doomed. But no, I'm kidding. But just, you know, taking precautions. I think firmware rootkits are really pretty dangerous because they kick in before the operating system has a chance to really boot. So I was just
and
completely
that's been popular in Lenovo's. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the Lenovo ranges that did that.
Yep.
I may be running a Lenovo laptop, but it runs Linux, and Linux does not accept that as a device.
That's right.
What's that?
There is, and Lenovo's popular for it because they got caught doing it in a less than good way. The concept is, in the UEFI BIOS, is there's a way you can put a driver in there, and Windows, when it finds that file, can actually download. So you have a few megs of storage, and it kicks off like a stub installer and will install things on there. What Lenovo got going is not putting drivers in there, but putting crap in there. They put the crappy Lenovo software on their consumer ones.
Sure.
So if you reloaded clean Windows on your Windows, it go, look what I found. And, whatever's in that firmware hole, it just loads without any...
Without question.
Yeah, without question. So, and they're not supposed to be accessed by anyone other than manufacturers, but obviously you see the problem.
Oh, yeah.
That other than the manufacturers have found out that you can exploit that. But Linux, because it's not even listed in their UDEV, it's not, there's no way to even get to it from Linux. Well, I mean, someone could probably write it, but why? So we have better ways of doing things in Linux.
Right.
So it's safe to run Linux on Lenovo's, but if you install clean Windows, you'll get crapware.
So there we say in 2 weeks before our upcoming trip.
Yeah, we have so many questions, Microsoft. Be prepared. That's what I put when I posted it. We're going to Microsoft. I said, this is like the ultimate hug your haters. Fly them out to Seattle and tell them how great you are.
Right.
The build engineers are going to ask us if we have any questions, and it's going to be like a Santa list. Whoa, we've got questions for days.
Yes.
Yeah.
I figure we're going to be avoiding any Windows 10 questions from, because that's just a can of worms. Probably even they don't want to answer.
Right.
Wow. So like, I have no idea. That's a different
team. None of us run it. So.
It's going to be interesting, though. You know, talk to somebody about running Linux on Azure and things like that. It's not all that bad, but...
No, I think it represents a giant shift in the company, realizing that running servers is big. I mean, look at AWS, look at Google, and Microsoft is like...
Well, they had to move in that direction simply because their competition is heavily invested in that direction. So,
yeah.
But Azure has already accumulated, I think it's at 240 minutes of cumulative downtime, and it's April.
Oh.
Google had 74 minutes last year, cumulative.
Oh,
so
really?
Google already poked fun at the Azure Cloud Server for going down so many times. So
I missed that that information.
Oh, Microsoft was livid because they got up on stage and they said, you know, Google won award for being the most uptime. They were even more up than they had it the day after AWS had their incident, the big reboot.
Oh, yeah.
So Google said, you know, hey, we won an award last year for being the largest cloud provider with the most uptime, blah, blah, blah. And it looks like things are looking great this year.
Oh,
Yeah, we know because our phones ring a lot. We, you know, being that we do Office 365 support, every time Azure goes down, I don't know why, but the problems seem to center around their authentication servers. It's weird because the auth server sits in front of everything. When the auth server goes down, it means the Xbox goes down, Microsoft Office 365 goes down, so that people can't log in. Now, if you're already logged in, it seems to keep working, but new logins won't occur. So obviously anyone who reboots or anything like that just starts having all kinds of problems. I don't know why or what they're doing there, but that's going to be kind of a question for them. What's up with the auth servers, guys? I mean, this is a valid question, and people need availability. The servers are up and running. This is not the Azure data center going down. It's mm-hmm. the authorization to get into it. Mm-hmm. So your services running on it remain up. So that's why Microsoft's fighting about the uptime thing, going, well, we're not really down. We're like, well, yeah, sure. You're right. The website was up, but we couldn't log in.
So, yeah, for all intents and purposes, for a user of your service, you are down because you cannot access the critical things that you need to access. Now, critical being me signing into my Xbox One to play games. That's critical to me. I want to have fun, too.
Well, yeah, especially if you can't, you're not working because your server's down, you should at least be able to sign in your Xbox. Damn it, same server.
Yeah.
You've got to think that they have monitoring placed at those critical endpoints. So they should be aware of this, and they should be aware of the load.
You know, I would like them, and this is something Microsoft historically has not done, is give a good debriefing on what happened, because they had a couple big outages with Azure, but they're completely vague, versus Amazon did a great breakdown. You know, they followed the playbook, a command was issued that shouldn't have been issued, we've modified it so it won't happen. I mean, that's a wonderful breakdown of what went wrong, mm-hmm. and that's what we like to know, because it rebuilds confidence in the product. There's no confidence in a product going, it went down, we're not saying why, but it's back up. It won't happen again, because we fixed it. Right. What'd you fix? You know, what happened? Right. So...
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if that's a holdover from being a closed source company.
They are notoriously bad about releasing information.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But we're looking forward to our trip.
We are.
Well, we are, yeah.
I would like to see that shift in culture there, just telling us what's going on. You know what I mean? We just want to know. That builds confidence in a product. We like to know the roadmap a little better. You know, it's so much reverse engineering. There's a Twitter account called, I think it's called The Walking Cat, and he releases private information of what's going on inside Microsoft all the time and gives code snippets of upcoming stuff. But that's literally how you have to figure out what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of, there's not very forthcoming. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. I guess it's time to move on to our next segment.
Yeah, next segment is.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
Listener feedback. And
do we have feedback from listeners?
We do.
We got an email yesterday, but I wasn't able to read it since we were in the middle of CyberPack.
So we're going to get a live reading on the air right now?
Sure, if you want to go through that. Yeah, a live reading of the email.
We'll read it live. Hey guys, show is great and very informative. Thank you. The reason I'm contacting you guys is that I've been having problems with some SSH when I'm outside of my network. My network is a little complex. I have two routers. One Verizon gave me with the Fios, and I have DWH installed on another router. Both routers are connected to Ubuntu 16.04 machine. The reason is that the Fios router doesn't have WOL. Wait, is Wake on LAN?
Yep.
Okay, make sure... And I was having trouble forwarding the Fios router to DDRRT. Then the Ubuntu machine opened ports from the Fios router. He drops all his IP address in here for us. Or no, just the ports. Trying to forward. Okay. And the VMware workstation. Okay, it's a whole support. I have to get removed. Open this.
Tom, are you going to open a support ticket?
Yeah. I'll work out a reply. It's going to be a lot longer for the same process for anything.
All right.
Huh. Okay, yeah, it's kind of a long one there. We'll come up with support answer forms. I'm not super clear on it.
Mm-hmm.
That one's going to take some research.
I'm going to do a research and we'll get an answer form.
Especially this is
on
the first time you've seen it, so.
Yeah
first time I've seen it.
Need to quantify the elements
of it. I'm guessing, and I've heard this from someone else that had some pfSense problems, and it may be true for this person as well, that Verizon Fios doesn't offer bridge mode. So you have to use their router, so you end up double netting to put something behind it. And I bet that's, I'm going to, with just reading over it, I'm going to guess that's where he's going with this. That's a common thing. I answer that question a lot because a lot of places just don't support bridge mode, so you have to use IP. And to go a step further outside the country, and actually in rural areas such as northern Michigan, you can't get public IPs anymore. Those large site-to-site wireless installs, they give you you have to pay a lot of extra money if you want a public IP. You are already NATed.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's going to become an issue for people who want to get SSH into services because they just don't have enough IPs. They can't afford to buy a block of them.
Well, you mean we ran out of IPv6 already?
Yeah.
It's all about IPv8 now.
That's okay. MIT is selling half of their 8 block.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. So they have an 8 block. Like, 8 wow. anything is MIT. So that's,
and they're selling half of it.
Well, sold to Amazon.
Oh.
Yeah, they sold it to Amazon. Yeah. What isn't it, like 8
oh,
million?
Oh, I missed that.
Or was it 2 million IPs that they sold?
It was so, a lot.
Amazon just got a bunch of IPs to use now.
Yes. So, 8 million, okay.
Wow, that's a lot.
I was trying to do the subnetting in my head. What's
happening? It is
hard
a slash
to subnet
8
and talk at the same
have.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they say it's 18 slash anything after that was MIT.
Yeah, yeah. 18 slash anything is MIT.
Well, because I think back in the early days, you know, that when they thought that it wasn't probably going to get all that big, they just gave big chunks to various organizations and companies.
And how many is Wayne State sitting on?
Do you know? Anyone?
Oh, Mike Ward's not here. He's Mike Ward told me that they're sitting on like an entire block like MIT is. Like if they ever wanted to sell them, they could.
Wow.
Anyways, let's get back to listening.
Right.
You know what they're doing with the money from MIT?
Building out an IPv6 network.
That's right. They're using it to fund their transition to IPv6.
Yes. Oh, that's excellent.
Not a bad thing.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
All right. So I think the bottom line for that listener's question then is that we're going to get back to them.
We'll get back to them. I got to start, so I'll work on a reply. So I think I get where they're coming with it.
Yeah. So another email we got was from Dave. And I know, Phil, you emailed back and forth with him about Dave and ShellCheck.
Yes. For the listeners who don't know what ShellCheck is, it's a fantastic tool for syntax and linting your shell scripts. So bash, sh, it's a tool written in Haskell, and it goes through and tells you what's wrong with your script.
You said linting your bash scripts. Is that like a little fuzzy sitting on your bash script?
It takes your computer, turns it upside down, all the crumbs. Hair and crumbs fall out. Possibly a snack, I don't know.
That's right. I think I remember you talking about that. It tells you what's wrong with it.
Yep.
I can see mine. Everything. That's a pretty good tool. So
yeah,
I don't know. Spell check and me are at war with each other. I've now gotten so bad at spelling, it doesn't know what I meant.
So no suggestions.
It doesn't. It's like, I have no idea what you want.
It says, dude.
I think my spelling has gotten worse because I'm so used to autocorrect. Like, you're just typing and it corrects. I'm like, cool. I don't know how to spell that anymore. I keep spelling it wrong and I keep spelling it right, so I never learn. I've lost part of the English language.
Yeah.
All right. So what else?
Another email we got was from Melvin. And he was talking about how we were talking about FreeNAS and looking at the new version.
Yes.
Did you know they rolled it back?
All the controversy. They even have the CTO left.
Really?
Really?
This is a big shakeup. Basically, the good news is this happens at private companies. We just don't get to have a public view of it. But apparently this is a hell of a shakeup going on there. I have it in our news notes, but it's worthy mentioning right now. But they had a whole announcement. They're like, a little overly ambitious. And I can't remember the word he used, but it's basically impossible to secure because there was just some design flaws that were not fixable and without enough time. They said they have no way to do it. But the good news is the new UI, some of the features that we liked about it, they're just porting back to the 9 series.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to get a facelift, which is cool. I think it needs a facelift. And we're going to get some of the, features, the Docker features, and some of those are going to be ported back into the 9 series. So the things that they could secure, but the whole way they did the VM with the Beehive, I don't think that's working. That's not, the implementation was not quite right. Apparently, and I didn't get into the details, but there's a lot of security issues with it.
Because I'm glad that they're backporting that UI, because that thing is so slick looking.
The
it's
UI is amazing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So that's what I was wondering whether I should wait to build mine until they re-release 10, or whether to build mine on the last version. Was it 9.13?
9.103 or something, yeah.
So, so Tom, the FreeNAS lecture that you were going to be doing for Semibug, you know, Southeast Michigan BSD user group, that I was going to try to schedule with you. I guess what we'll be doing is doing that at a future date.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of funny because I have a video I did on the FreeNAS Grail. I did a whole tutorial on how I did it. And part of my tutorial, though, had all the shortcomings in there. And people are actually doing follow-ups when they fix them. I'm like, I don't know when they're going to fix them. I've been replying to everyone's comments, like, when are they going to fix it? I'm like, I don't know, because I can't get the answer in the forums. And then some people are like, you know, I watched your video, and then I found the link. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry that they're not developing anymore, so these issues aren't getting fixed. Good news is I'll be doing a 9.1 with a new facelift tutorial on FreeNAS.
All right.
So, yeah. And some people are really angry. There's not any easy way to roll back.
I hope that no one has upgraded a production system to FreeNAS 10 because it has just come out.
Yeah.
And just gone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is a very short-lived release.
Now, you think that they would have done extensive testing before it gets out in the, you know.
Well, it's not just the testing. They literally were missing features. Like, I encrypt all my hard drives. You can't do that properly in FreeNAS 10. You have to jump through hoops to get encrypted hard drives replaced. There's a bunch of little bugs. Like, they knew that feature wasn't there. They knew you had to actually go down to not the FreeNAS command line, but the actual FreeBSD utilities for ZFS to make things function, to replace hard drives. Mm-hmm. And why would you, if you're a NAS system, why would you not have that built in? Like, it's built into all the other versions of FreeNAS for, like, the last, like, 7 to 10 years.
Actually, Tom, I just mentioned FreeNAS, and you're really speaking of pfSense.
I do both.
Oh, okay, because I think it's pfSense that Semibug is interested in.
Yeah. I did one last year, Semibug, and I'll do again this year. I'm great for that.
Yeah, they liked it, so I'll follow up with you.
Okay.
Cool. All right. What else do we have on as far as listener feedback?
So a few weeks ago, we got a message from a guy named Matt King about hacking his website. So the listeners who run their own web servers, who might not be command line jockeys like the rest of us, it's always a good time to learn some command line tools, especially to help secure your own servers. So this guy wanted us to check out his website. So I ran an nmap, I ran a curl to identify web server headers to see what kind of information was being exposed, and then I did some DNS lookups.
Did you own that site?
I did not, but I found more ports that were open than needed to be. I haven't gone back and checked, but doing simple scans like this, I say simple in quotes because it's a learning curve to even use these tools, but everyone can help defend each other. You don't need to pay a service to
sounds like a tutorial.
Absolutely. You know, I've said this before, I need to start a blog.
Yeah, start a blog. Yeah. I happen to have a studio. You can record it anytime. I'll give you keys.
Oh, wow. There you go. Well, that's pretty interesting, Phil. So I'm sure he was pretty happy to get that info back from you. Or you're in the process of sending it back to him now.
He said thanks.
Yeah, excellent. Very helpful. So,
yeah, there's a lot that goes into security and people need to... I'm glad he reached out and asked, though, because it's how did I get hacked is usually the question we get asked. It's always the post-mortem that we're doing.
So that
well, you had all these ports open and all the default passwords on all of
them. That's right.
All right. Well, that's all I saw for listener feedback.
Yeah.
Anything else? No?
No.
All right. Then we'll go on to distros. This one.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news. It's
Oh, okay. So, distros for this week.
Yes.
Do you guys want to start, Mary?
Yeah. You probably saw that Kali Linux had a recent release, 2017.1, which, I think last year... I reviewed that and really enjoyed it. So they've got a release out, and also earlier this month too, and in an upcoming episode of Sunday Morning Linux Review, I'm going to be doing, I'm taking another look at Solace OS.
Right.
So we'll have some information on that. They appeared on the DistroWatch list, I think it was a couple weeks, about a week ago, on the 18th. So, yeah, so look forward to that. Let's see.
With Kelly, they said there's AWS images now that make it easy if you want to spin up some tools.
Some penetration testing from the cloud.
From the cloud, yeah.
I don't know. That just sounds kind of...
Be wary about that.
Yeah.
We've gotten cease and desist letters from Amazon for nmapping inside of our own networks before. They want you to clear certain things with them first to say, hey, we're doing scans, even though it's within our private IP space of Amazon. But they take... Security is no joke with them.
Wow.
Just be wary. Do some research first to see what you can and can't do. Ask questions.
That's a good point. You know, I saw that Laka has a release. Have you guys heard of Laka before?
No.
It's spelled L-A-K-K-A.
Alaka. Right. You guys saw that coming to you. That was pretty bad.
It's a lightweight distribution that's based on RetroArch, or has RetroArch built into it. So it's the retro gaming thing. So you've heard of the RetroPie, and that has that's based on RetroArch also. But
when you
Laka,
say retro gaming, are we talking about what 8-bit games?
No, it's like I don't know. NES,
Galaga, or some of the old
Nintendo, Super Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the emulated gaming.
Yeah.
But it includes 12 emulators or something like that. It has MAME and Sega Genesis, and
I have a video I did in a RetroPie. The only problem I always have is everyone's like, where do you get all the ROMs from? I'm like, you have to legally own them. That's all I can say. That's because everyone wants to know, how did you get all those ROMs, Tom? I own them all.
Yeah, and I think people who are running the release candidate of this distro are going to be able to upgrade directly through their graphical interface, so they're not going to have to do anything special, just a standard upgrade.
That's nice.
Yeah, so that's pretty convenient. I'll have to take a look at that.
One fun. If you want to play with it. Yeah. I have a RetroPie.
Yeah. A RetroPie?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I was thinking a Laka 2.0, but I'll look at that too.
I think the big difference is Laka has a pretty UI on it that's a little bit different from the RetroPie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they added in extra controller mappings and stuff. Because I know when I plugged in my USB PS2 controller, it just worked. You know, everything on it was good to go.
Year of the Linux gaming desktop.
Yeah.
Retro gaming desktops.
Yeah.
So Tails has now got another one out there. I've reviewed
Tails
before.
Say
I love Tails. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Side note, if you ever try to run it in a VM, VMs don't like the Mac spoofing thing. They have seen no problems with it. Other than that, it works great.
And when,
not that
when
you're
you
really
say,
likely to run it in a VM, but ideally you want to boot your system up with it. But
you know what they say? They say that they removed the I2P off of there. So previously you were able to do either I2P or Tor.
Yeah.
And they said they removed I2P. I wonder why. There's some kind of vulnerability or something?
I think there was just some developer support that they didn't have for it, and so that's why they ended up dropping it. So I suspect that if somebody is, or some group or someone is willing to get involved with that, you know, maybe I'll do that.
All
right. Yeah, it's a neat distribution though. The way it does everything right to secure you. And a side note, when you do run a VM, it also warns you. Run a VM is not the most secure way to run it. You got to click through a warning. So they really kind of thought of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And because everything's going through Tor by default, when you try to run something outside of Tor, it gives you like all these red screens and it puts little red boxes around things. Because there's a way it gives you an option like to connect directly from the IP instead of through the Tor node. It like gives you every warning, which I like. So it's really hard to do. If you're trying to do something anonymously, they warn you when you turn off anything anonymous on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a nice job on that.
Yeah.
Excellent. So.
All right. Can we go on to news?
News.
Tech news and views.
News.
So what do you guys have? Who
You first, Tony. No, just kidding.
I have nothing.
Right. I got news.
I got.
Want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So playing with a new project, and it's also kind of neat because it's all on GitHub. It's called PiSignage.com. And if you haven't guessed, it's using a Raspberry Pi for signage. So we have a proposal for a large manufacturing company with sites around the U.S. to put in TVs at all the locations with Raspberry Pis running from a central server. Nice. They kind of wanted to maintain some control themselves, and so this being open source and on GitHub, you can download the server or they'll host it for you. They'll host the server portion for you. The setup is stupid easy. You image the card, and it gives you a long 16-digit alphanumeric code. You type it in, and it registers. So real easy. Or you can go into it through a local port and configure it to point to your servers. But from the server interface, you can do its own upgrades. You can load videos on it. You can load any type of assets you want that the Pi can play. So it plays 1080p video fine. It even has the option to turn on and off the TV on a schedule, because a lot of the new HDMI spec has power on and off switches within the HDMI for televisions. So you can actually say turn it off. So it's actually got power saving features, which is pretty cool. So I've been playing around with it. We have a demo set up in my office, and I was happy with it. These are the things that keep me from getting my building done. Like, these projects keep coming up, and we just keep doing stuff. Then we set it up in our building. It was kind of fun.
On that, they're making another digital or Raspberry Pi for industrial uses.
Really?
Have you seen that? Where it has no ports on it, but it has this big, plug site. What is it called? Like a DIMM. It slides into a slot.
Okay.
And they're making TVs that have those
slots. Oh, that would be great.
So you can easily just upgrade your TV to a Raspberry Pi, just pop that in there, and then all of a sudden all the ports are just directly right into the TV.
That's a great idea. That
would be perfect for your kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as we've been debating how we want to do it, right now I just use a regular Raspberry Pi, and that's what we built the quote with because it was available, but that would be an interesting future for this. Because we think about getting more and more into this. We're working with a graphics company that wants to start deploying these, so it's kind of a partnership between me and another company that does design. They want to design, but they're not technical. They want to be able to operate from their office and change menus out, change all the advertising that goes around all these companies. So they do branding for this company. So that's how we got involved with it. So, yeah, easy way to deploy it. It's the end of the Ubuntu phone. You get to your last updates in June, apparently, the end of security updates. It sounds like you're dropping support for part of that slimming down we were talking about before the show, where Ubuntu, we talked about that actually last show. Ubuntu's been cutting staff and trying to make themselves attractive to Microsoft to buy them or something.
Yeah.
Speculation completely. I don't have an article on that, but just saying.
Well, it'd certainly would be a good compliment for the Windows phone, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, it has about the same market share.
The Ubuntu phone will live on my phone in sticker only.
It'll live on the sticker phone. All right. And obviously Gnomebuntu is going away too.
Really?
They're just going to merge because there's going to be no need to create a separate version, so that project's actually going to be end with this last version because they're getting rid of Unity and Veneer. But with all the Canonical layoffs, there's good news for people who work in that field. AMD is hiring developers for their open source graphics team. AMD is going to get serious about supporting Linux and graphics, which has not been their strong point. So the reason we all have NVIDIA chips in our machines. But they're hiring a lot. So they're probably just going to be a transition. So you used to work for Ubuntu, now you can work for AMD, still developing stuff. So if you're interested, go over to, Google it. They're hiring. So
I remember late nights as a kid with that FGLRX driver.
Yes.
On old ATI cards.
I wasn't a kid. I was older, but still agitated with the same exact problem you had with it.
I remember that, and then vowing never to buy anything that ran their graphic card adapter.
If you messed up that config, just wipe the system, start over.
Yep. And another closing news, Debian is officially shutting down FTP servers on November 1st.
Really?
Yes. It's about time for that insecure protocol to kind of... You shouldn't be downloading things over FTP. You can get man-in-the-middles. You can get spoofed things. There's no certificates or anything. In other related news, there's a petition for people to re-put all those images on Gopher, because Gopher still exists on the internet, apparently. I just seen that. I was like, what? We're going to shut down a few schools, but we got this older protocol that we... I don't know if it's older or not, but it's either way.
Mm-hmm.
It, The BrickerBot. The guy has spoken up. We talked about BrickerBot, and it is the bot that's going around using default credentials, logging into IoT devices, and bricking them by rewriting the firmware and setting the processes to zero. Basically, it is the destroyer of insecure IoT things. So the same IoT things that would have got picked up by the MiraNet bot, instead are getting bricked. And I love his statement. I'm going to read it word for word because this is wonderful. I consider my project a form of internet chemotherapy. I sometimes jokingly think of myself as the doctor. Chemotherapy is harsh treatment that nobody in their right mind would administer to a healthy patient, but the internet was becoming seriously ill. And in Q3 and Q4 2016, the moderate remedies were ineffective. So he just decided to brick all the IoT things.
Now, but here's the thing, which is funny, unless you're, you know, some poor consumer whose stuff isn't suddenly working. So when you say brick, I just want to make sure I understand brick. It is just never, it can't be used ever again, or
yeah,
it just...
No more. He's rewriting the firmware and doing, because a lot of these will support, and this is how the MiraNet works, they'll support an unsigned firmware. And because all of them are based on a similar system on the chip, you know, whether it's a light bulb or a toaster, they generally have the same back end.
Yeah.
And we covered, like, you know, 4 or 5 shows ago that one of them was using the same SSH keys because they weren't regenerating the keys with every device. They made an image with pre-generated keys. So once you figured out the SSH key to a series, you had all of the keys to the series. And lots of them, the developers thought it'd be convenient to have hard-coded passwords in them. So they shipped with it and thought maybe no one would ever reverse engineer the firmware and find the password and username, but they did. And that's how these botnets have been attacking, is they know these default credentials, they know these default SSH keys, so they just send it out and people connect things directly to the internet, not behind a firewall.
They're so excited. Yeah, they're so excited with their new IoT thing. And
I'll admit, I understand the point. Like, we have a client that has a infected, DVR. Yeah, it's a DVR and it has security holes in it. There's no firmware patch because it's one of those cheap off-brand NVR systems for video recording. They know that when it gets hacked in MiraNet, they just reboot it and hope it doesn't get hacked for a little while, but it keeps functioning as a device. Hence, they will not buy a new one because they paid like $800 for it and they're not paying another $800. That was kind of their answer. We'll just reboot it once in a while when it gets infected, but they don't want to put it behind a firewall because they want to watch it from their phones. If you put it behind a firewall, you'd solve the problem. So the BrickerBot, eventually, I hope, gets to it, and I'll have to get a new one, and it'll quit being joining the botnet army.
Wow.
They're also up to version 4 of BrickerBot, by the way, which 1, 2, 3, and now up to 4. And apparently, the new one's using some type of BitTorrent protocol to help propagate even faster. Like, this guy is, like, chemotherapying the internet. And as we talked about before, I have a link in the show notes for a FreeNAS 10 Corel shelved and features being ported back to the 9.1 series. That's happening. And now here's another article that's kind of interesting. It's a link to a series of articles that someone's compiling. It's Europe's dire dependency on Microsoft. And we've talked about this a lot. There's been a lot of concern of this whole monoculture of everyone running the same operating system. And Europe's a little ahead of us on it. We're concerned with other things here in America.
I remember a few years ago, everybody was pretty excited about the city. I think the city of Munich had transitioned from Windows to Linux or Ubuntu, whatever it was. And then a couple of years later, was it last year or maybe it was? Yeah,
recently.
Recently, exactly. They're moving back, and part of it may have been due to the change of the mayor
I don't think they actually moved back yet. And this has happened twice now, where they said, "Well, maybe we should look at moving back." And they do a study on whether it would, you know, what's the cost to keep on running Linux or to move back to Windows.
Their current status is a mixed deployment. So they kind of have a mixed system, which is not that bad. At least you're partway there. But apparently the new SAP product, even though there's a Linux platform for it, they don't get the full feature set unless they run it. The other hang up is with running Windows is they're really dependent on the Office 365 platform because people won't live without Outlook. And they're just so used to using it. And we, you know, even some of my clients, they literally have to use the Office 365 platform if they do any government bidding because our government sends the bid forms with stupid, crazy macros and dumb things in them, and it's all based on Microsoft Office documents. They won't port over at all for proper, they just don't work right. when you try to open them in open office.
Something I've discovered, maybe you guys have seen this, if you've created a document in, say, LibreOffice or OpenOffice, you go to open it in Word. You ever notice that the graphics, if you've got a screenshot that you've dropped into a document and you open it in Word, that it's darker? There is a bug. Apparently there's a luminosity bug that... I think it must be in Word, because when you open it in LibreOffice, it looks fine.
Yeah.
That it puts it like 50%. And so I had prepared a document, in LibreOffice, open it in Word, and all of my graphics were gray. You could still see what they were, but it's just that the white background of the graphic was gray.
Yeah, there's a lot of compatibility issues. And that's one of those, what makes it so tricky is the fact that there's so much legacy support in the government, and our government's really notorious for this, and government contracts represent a lot of money for a lot of different clients, and that goes the same for Europe. Once the government's used to using these documents with these macros, the government doesn't change workflow unless there's really, really strong reason to change it, and there's not a strong reason to change it, so they keep doing exactly that, which kind of means that you have to run it yourself, or you won't be able to open their documents and participate in the bids. Right. So, yeah, it kind of makes it tough. So I understand where they're at from Europe, but it's a whole link to a series of articles on there, because one of the rules that Europe has had to break at the EU for years, any company convicted of antitrust cannot. They lose all eligibility for government bids. They've always had to make exception for Microsoft because there's not a competitor. So they lost the antitrust case, but instead of that breaking it so they can't use them, they wrote an exception in EU law that says you have to use them, even though they violate the laws of EU that companies that have committed these crimes can't be used.
Well, maybe there'll be a question we can ask them when we're there. No.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
It's a tricky situation. There's not an easy way. But
I think we're running short on time right now.
Okay.
So we couldn't get into the podcast suite, so we came down to the computer lab. And the next talk is supposed to start in about 5 minutes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So we're going to have to wrap up here.
All right. Well, great. I think maybe what we could do is... Wow, that was pretty fast. I thought it was like 10 o'clock. Should I do a Linux convention scene if I can get the document?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay. See. Ooh, I thought we were going to all go through the news. Let me...
Sorry, Mary.
That's fine.
Yeah, sorry, I occupied a lot of time.
Yeah, no, that's quite all right. I want to make one comment, though, about Microsoft's their revenue for last quarter. I think it was last quarter. They actually actually doing pretty well, except for their Surface sales have declined. You know that Microsoft Surface?
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of laptop, notebook, whatever. I like the form of it, that has declined. And then the notes that came with their earnings said that there was no material revenue from their phone, which is kind of in keeping with what we've indicated here. So, all right, well, you want to go ahead? I can jump right into Linux convention scene. And this is Linux and related items. So May 16th through the 18th, 2017, in Miami, Florida, at the Intercontinental, we've got ApacheCon North America. This gathers all sorts of committers and open source community members and developers to learn and collaborate on technologies and projects related to Apache and its related components. So that's coming up. We also have coming up before then, because I needed to sort these a little better, May 2nd through the 5th, which is I think next week, is the Red Hat Summit 2017. This is at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Now, there are going to be hundreds of sessions led by the brightest and best in open source. Hey, we're not going to be there. Wait a minute. Hands-on experience with our newest technologies and face-to-face interactions with product experts. So that sounds really like a good one.
Yeah.
Then also next weekend, we have got Linux Fest Northwest 2017 at the Bellingham Technical College in Bellingham, Washington. LFNW features presentations and exhibits on various FOSS topics, as well as Linux distributions and applications. It's something for everyone from the novice to the professional. So that's next weekend up in Washington, if you happen to be up that way. Also, throughout the month of May, this is kind of cool, they've got Linux Presentation Day in Switzerland. So across various cities in Switzerland, they're going to have Linux talks Linux enthusiasts showing Linux just to get people interested in it, further interested. That's kind of cool. And then also in Nuremberg, Germany, May 26th to the 28th, we've got the OpenSUSE Conference 2017. Now, this is the annual OpenSUSE community event that brings people from around the world together to meet and collaborate. So there are talks, workshops, birds of a feather session. It provides a really good framework for even more casual meetups and discussions, too. So that's coming up at the end of the month. And then finally, we've got PyCon Web 2017, and that's May 27th through the 28th. And that's at the Institute of Computer Science in Munich, Germany. Now, that's 3 days of intense practice. There'll be three tracks and 30 international speakers. It's about Python and the web stack. So there'll be talks on Django, Plone, Tornado, TurboGears, Pyramid, and other web-related tools. Sounds really cool. If that were a little closer, that'd be something I'd go to just to learn more about Python.
There was a fantastic talk yesterday by Charles Severance.
Yes, Dr. Chuck.
Yes, that was really fun.
Yes, and you know, just a quick comment on that too before we wrap up. I took that Python for Everybody, that course, that I took it in 2015 online through Coursera, and it was great. I mean, I kind of fumbled my way through. I completed it. My programs and it eventually ran, but it was fun because there were hundreds of people participating. And it was a real crowd, kind of a crowdsourced. Course where people you could post questions, and sometimes other students could help you out with, you know, giving you some hints and answers and things, but it was great. So,
all right,
I guess I'm gonna wrap up our show.
Yeah,
we should wrap up.
We got folks coming in for the next talk.
Yeah,
hopefully the presenter's here.
Yeah, he's here.
Okay, we're really sorry. We're gonna wrap up.
Hey,
all right. So you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 234.
Yep, live from PenguCon 2017.
All right, and this is Tony Bemis.
Tom Lawrence.
Mary Tomich.
And Phil Parada.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.